I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of actual and imagined. I declare all my negative action accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniriyatayami. So now we'll begin with our first meditation of the evening. We begin by checking our posture. If we're on a cushion, we're seated on the front third of the cushion, so our pelvis is a little opened up. If we're sitting in a chair, we're not leaning back in the chair, but we're sitting straight, upright, our back a little bit straighter than we normally sit, but not rigid. Our head is not tilted to one side or the other, but is maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Our eyes are either lightly closed or just very slightly open, so the small amount of light comes in. Mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Our tongue is on the hard palate behind our upper teeth. Our shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is open. This opens up the energy channels in front of the spinal column. Our upper arms are away from our torso so that some air can flow through there. Our right hand is on our left, with thumbs touching slightly below our navel. And our legs are, if we're sitting on a cushion, crossed in such a way that we find comfortable and stable. If we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor, maybe with a cushion underneath our feet. So just scan your body, starting at the top and working down, and identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address those now so they don't become an issue during the meditation to follow. And having established our posture, we take three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting back towards the spine on the out-breath. And we allow our breath to return to its normal pattern. And we begin, as always, by setting our motivation. And our motivation for doing this meditation and for talking and thinking about the subjects that are to follow. As much as possible, let's make it the bodhicitta motivation, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all, the wish to completely develop my capacity for compassion and for wisdom so that I can be of greater service to other sentient beings. That's not normally the way we think, but let's kind of intentionally generate that motivation tonight. And having set our motivation, we begin the actual meditation. So for the next 7 or 8 minutes, we're just going to place our concentration on the breath, the physical sensation of air moving in and out through our nostrils. Direct perception of that. This is developing our ability to concentrate. So we're practicing, we're developing that skill by working with the breath. And as we proceed along our spiritual path, will use that ability to concentrate, to pay attention to other things, particularly to the thoughts in our mind. And that's really what this module is about. We take this ability to concentrate and look at the thoughts in our mind as they arise and identify whether they make us happy or whether they make us unhappy. But that's not what we're going to be doing here. We're just going to practice concentrating, which doesn't mean we grit our teeth and get all tense. We just become a little bit more focused, but a relaxed kind of focus, mind on the breath. Just gently placing the concentration, the awareness on the movement of air in and out through our nostrils. And every time our mind wanders off to something else, we gently come back to the breath over and over and over again. And as always, we end our meditation with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've created a positive imprint on our mind stream just by developing the ability to concentrate. That in and of itself is a virtuous action, and it makes a positive imprint on our mind stream. And may we think, may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. And you can relax your concentration. And now we'll read together the root text, the 8 verses of thought transformation.
Page 161.
Thank you. Okay. In the Gold Prayer Book, page 161. And we'll pause after each verse. We'll read those out loud together, and then we'll stay a little bit in the meditative state, this kind of focused state, and think about each verse for a moment before we go on to the next one. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. When, out of envy, others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When someone whom I have benefited in whom I have great hopes, gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. Undefiled by the stains of the superstition of the eight worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, be released from the bondage of attachment. Okay, so nothing really complicated in those eight verses. Quite simple, but pretty much antithetical, the exact opposite of the way most of us think most of the time. And they seem completely almost unnatural or perverse in a way. And we can say, oh, that would be nice to think that way, but that's not my mind. And that's based on a false concept, really, of what our mind is like. How many people took the first module, Mind and Its Mind and Its Potential? Anybody in here take that one? Yeah. So it's really based on what was discussed in that module. And if you didn't take that, the Buddhist concept of the mind is that it's much more flexible and malleable than we imagine it to be. Our concept of a fixed mind with fixed likes and dislikes is a fallacy, according to the Buddha. Our mind has an infinite potential to change into anything we want to change it into. There is nothing that cannot be removed or eliminated from it if we don't want it there, and there's nothing that cannot be placed there if we would like to place it there. It's that potential for ultimately complete Buddhahood that is the amazing thing about our mind, that nothing is fixed or solid or permanent about it. And we certainly think that we have habitual ways of thinking that I am an angry person, or I am a kind person, or I am a depressed person, or I am this. And that's really just acknowledging habitual ways we have of thinking. They're just habits, like smoking or biting our nails or eating candy. And though difficult though it may be to do, we can change our habits. We can eliminate those habits that don't bring us happiness, which thoughts motivated by anger, attachment, and ignorance do not bring. If we think they do, that's a misconception that we need to address. And we can create new habits along the lines of what we read about in the eight verses, where these kinds of thoughts arise as easily and spontaneously and as frequently as the thoughts now we have of anger or irritation or impatience or jealousy. That doesn't happen overnight, okay? It's a long, slow process, and nobody else can do it for you. It involves working with your own mind. What Lama Yeshe, who is the founder of the FPMT, the organization that we're part of, described as being your own therapist. It involves being willing to look at your mind, identifying those thoughts that cause problems for you, and replacing them with thoughts that bring happiness. And it's a process that we can do, and it's available to all of us. And there's nothing mystical or woo-woo about it. It's just very down-to-earth psychology 101. Get rid of the old habits and replace them with the new habits. But it's difficult, okay? I'm not saying it's difficult in that it's long, hard work. And the first, one of the first tools we have to bring to that task is the ability to concentrate. Because most of the time we don't even notice our thoughts till we're thinking about them in the past. Oh, I was thinking that at the time. Or I thought, God, I didn't realize that. That's what I was thinking. You know, they've already kind of arisen. We've developed a story about them. We've elaborated on them. We've given them some context. We've given them some justification. And then we may have even spoken based on them or acted physically out of them. As we develop our ability to concentrate, we see these thoughts sooner and sooner in the process of arising. Okay, and just being aware of them doesn't make them go away completely, but it does. That's the first step in lessening their strength. Just being aware of it. Say, oh, that's anger. You know, I thought that was justified response. No, actually, if I look at that, that's anger. Okay, I'm really irritated with that person. Okay, it wasn't just being correct or being right. There's really some anger there. And we identify these thoughts sooner and sooner. First, we do it on the cushion because that's kind of a contained, controlled laboratory or whatever you may say. You know, meditation is about doing the practice that we have these skills when we get up off the cushion and go to work and come home and interact with other people. We can bring those tools into practice. Seems quite artificial at first, but with time, it really becomes a natural process. So the concentration that we develop first by looking at our breath and then bring it to the other thoughts that come to our mind is a necessary tool in transforming the thoughts and developing these new habits that will make us happy and ultimately allow us to be of greater benefit to others. Okay, so it's a tool that we're developing. And then we identify these negative thoughts, and then we can kind of force out the positive thought. And it seems very artificial, unnatural to think this way. Seems like a joke sometimes. But with practice, it becomes a habit. It becomes something that arises more and more spontaneously. So we don't have to forcibly generate it. I mean, our thoughts change. You know, someone who was a complete stranger to us 2 weeks ago can now be a very dear friend. That's just a habit of way of thinking that we've developed in response to that person. We've replaced indifference with actual affection. Okay, sometimes it goes the other way. Someone that we're quite close to becomes an enemy, so to speak. We've replaced the kind thoughts. We're going in the other direction. We've replaced the thoughts of warmth and kindness with thoughts of anger, okay? That's thought transformation in reverse. That's going in the wrong way, a way that doesn't make us happier. Okay, so that's really what this whole module is about. And to be honest with you, I don't think you even need to believe in Buddhism or accept very much of it to find this module extremely practical. Okay, a Buddha is not practicing thought transformation. a Buddha's mind is completely transformed. These negative thoughts never arise, never, there's no karma for negative thoughts. So this is something to help us along the way on the path as we progress towards enlightenment. Do we have any questions about anything I've said tonight or in the past couple evenings?
We do have a couple questions on Zoom. So okay. Manisha, if you would like to unmute, feel free to ask your question.
Okay, hi. Thank you. So I have been meditating on the principles, the eight principles, and it's worked so far for me, like 1, 2, 3, 4. When it comes to 7 and 8, it's not today. I know we're doing 5 and 6, but 7 and 8, I would be like definitely, like I have questions about attachment. I have questions about how do I forgive, blah, 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 like mother and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I'll come to that. But I specifically today, you talked about habits. And I want to mention that I am from the East. Like I was born and raised in the East and I've moved to the West. And I developed a habit of enjoying wine, drinking wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not appreciate that about me, but I think what happens is I recognize that I substituted this for my companionship, feeling isolated, and then the attachment grew, the relationship with that consumption took various roles, and I recognize that, but I do also recognize it's not a healthy habit, and especially when I get into a creative process of creating an art, I am not sure what went wrong here, and I'm trying to identify and recognize that what can I do in terms of my practice just when the urge arises to, so for example, it's usually in the evening, I recognize that, and what, how can I break that pattern? And I have been reaching out to, initially it started with isolation and then trying to reach out with community, blah, 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 you don't find your right community to belong to, I recognize meditation, blah, 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 I mean, this is my true self. And I wanted to come to Kadampa Center today, and I'm like, no, I can't go there. I mean, it's too late, and I did drink some wine. So I want to break that habit. I want to know what can I do to change, you know, just that?
I don't
know
how to frame it, but. Well, thank you for the comment. Thank you for your openness. I mean, it comes across as a issue with attachment. And so attachment is defined as overestimating the good qualities of an object. There may be some good qualities there, but we overestimate them. And the antidotes that were given, you know, I don't know if I can go into your particular case. I'm just giving you the party line here. The antidotes to attachment are to look at the problems that are caused by the object of attachment. You know, be really honest with yourself. Evaluate, how does this help me? How does this hurt me? To look at the impermanence of the sensations that come from the object of attachment, that whatever good feelings we get do not last. And then ultimately look at the emptiness, the lack of inherent existence of the object. So I'm really just giving you very general ideas about ways you can approach this. But if you look at some of the teachings of the Buddha on attachment, I think that's where I would start looking in your case. Okay.
What would be the meditation practice?
Well, you would deal with the actual object here that you're attached to. And once you've developed your concentration, look at the problems that it causes and be very honest with yourself. I mean, there's nothing mystical about that. I think we've got a comment here in the room. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention there is a group that meets here on Friday nights. It's not a Kanampa Center group, but we host the group here, and they talk about a lot of that particular topic. So if you wanted to go to the Kanampa Center website and look on Friday evening, you could find out a little bit more about that group.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask to move along here, thank you again. Thank you very much for the comment. I appreciate it. Let's see. We've got a hand up over here.
Rabbi, I was trying to explain this class to someone, and I was trying to talk about how you should hold those who are a problem as precious jewels and as gurus, and their response was, there's not enough time or energy. Why don't I just gravitate towards better people? How would you answer that?
Well, that is the teaching of the Buddha also. He said, you know, if you find that there are people who bring you down, who bring out negative thoughts, who bring out the worst in you, and you cannot, you know, see them as your guru, you just say, that is just a bridge too far, then it is perfectly reasonable to separate yourself from them. The two aren't contradictory. It all depends where you are in that practice and what the particular issues that person brings up. But I think we all acknowledge at some point we can't just hang out with nice people, you know. One, we don't have the choice because we will encounter difficult people no matter what we do. And there's something a little, you know, just hanging out with the people who you think are nice gets a little standoffish or something. But it's not an invalid point to say, I just can't deal with this person. There is no way I can approach, you know, I can transform my thoughts about this person. That being around them, just these thoughts are automatically going to arise. I have no control over it. So I'll just keep my distance from them. Yeah. No, it's not an invalid thing to do. Any other comments? Somebody didn't like that comment I just made.
We're getting a lot
okay.
of thunder here.
Whoa.
There's one more question, Robbie,
okay.
if you have time.
Yeah, let's do
okay.
one more, and then we'll go through tonight's verses.
Okay.
Yeah.
It always bothers me to think or to accept abuse, etc., as humble without questioning others why they are abusive. Otherwise, it's like making them feel right without correcting their behavior.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to set that aside because that's a lead into one of the verse,
okay.
the first verse we're going to talk about tonight. Okay, verse number 5. Yeah. When out of envy, and we could put other negative mind states there, you know, out of anger, out of resentment. Others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like. This is verse 5. I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. So I think that's very much what was coming up in that question. Okay, so again, we're talking about thought transformation, okay? We're talking about our thoughts, our mind. We're not talking about what we say or what we do physically. We're talking about what we think. Okay, so this means, you know, if someone attacks us, this does not mean that we're going to lie down and not fight back, that we are going to accept any abuse, okay, or become a victim or allow others to take advantage of us. Okay, it doesn't mean that's not what this verse is saying. It's saying that we develop the mental attitude that regardless of what our actions are, we're not attached to being right, to winning, to coming out of every situation being one up on the other person, but instead we approach those situations with compassion for the other person. Even if we know that what they're doing is incredibly wrong from according to any standards that we may have. First, we have a sense of compassion because we know that they're creating negative karma for themselves. Okay? We know that they, like ourselves, want to be happy, but are going about it in a way that at least us doesn't seem very skillful. Okay? And we can resist them. We can push back when it's appropriate. We can point out a different way. This doesn't mean we're just a bowl of oatmeal accepting everything. Okay, but it means as we do it, our mind is not about winning or having a victory. Our mind is motivated by compassion. Okay, by a sense of giving to that person. Even when we're being abused, and we know we're being abused, and we're going to resist it as hard as we can, or we see them abusing someone else, that may even be a more powerful situation. Doesn't mean we don't step in to stop the abuse, but we do it with a mental attitude that's motivated by compassion for that person, not by attachment to I'm right, I'm doing a good thing, I'm being virtuous, but about I want that, even that person, to be happy. And maybe frequently the best thing we can do is to physically stop someone from doing a negative action. If they were going to hit someone or attack someone or kill someone, to actually stop in, jump in and stop that action could be incredibly compassionate. Okay, so this is about what is our mind like in those situations. It's not a mind of anger. It's not a mind of hatred. It's not a mind of wanting to destroy that person, but it's a mind motivated by compassion, the wish that even that person be free of suffering because they are causing themselves suffering. So could you read that question again, and let me see if I've addressed that.
Yes. It's not really quite a question.
Yes, comment, yeah.
It always bothers me to think or to accept abuse, et cetera, as mm-hmm. humble without questioning others why they are abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's like making them feel right without correcting mm-hmm. their
yeah.
behavior.
Okay. So I think the point is we don't have to accept abuse. Okay. We don't have to assume that they're right. But we don't have to get into a mode where I'm going to win this struggle. I'm going to come out the victor. Okay? It's entirely about compassion for the other person. And this is not the way we act in those situations. You know, we feel anger arise and we get a charge out of it in those situations. And it can motivate us to act, but it is ultimately poisoning our mind stream, so that if we can do the same actions out of compassion, you know, so that the Buddha even killed out of compassion. He knew that he had clairvoyance and he could tell that this other person was going to kill a lot of people and create incredible negative karma. So the Buddha actually killed that person before he could kill all these other people. And that was done out of complete compassion. Now, this is where you can, this is dangerous, okay? I don't think most of us are at that state. And you can fool yourselves. You know, when you find yourself saying to someone, this is going to hurt you a lot more than it hurts me, you know, there's probably some sort of attachment to being right and going in there. So, a lot of ego can come in and poison the situation. Again, this is where being our own therapist, having to develop the ability to really look at our mind honestly, comes in very importantly. Okay, but this is giving up at wanting to win, to be right in every situation, the mental attitude. Okay, any questions or comments? Anything online there? Okay. That really can't, I didn't know we were going to get thunder like that tonight. So that's verse 5. When others, out of jealousy, or let's see, I'll read it. When out of envy or jealousy, others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat. That means mentally, I shall accept defeat. Okay, doesn't mean you're going to let them beat you or anything. I shall mentally accept defeat and offer the victory to others. Okay, again, mentally offer compassion to them. When they're talking about offering victory, they're saying offering the wish that even this person who is so awful could be happy, could be free of suffering. Okay, move on to verse 6. This is a good one. This comes up a lot. Or at least it does for me, yeah. When someone whom I have benefited and whom I have great hopes, okay, that means we're talking about attachment there, okay? This is, I've done something for someone and they are going to act this way and do this back for me. When someone whom I have benefited and in whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, when they don't do what I wanted them to do, I shall regard that person as my holy guru, with guru being teacher here. Okay, so I think everybody's familiar with this. This, again, is talking primarily about attachment. Okay, and this is, you know, this comes up very often in our, as we're progressing along our spiritual path. You know, we start to realize our motivation is not pure. It's not all negative, but it's definitely not all positive. You know, we do kind things for other people. We do act out of compassion. We do act out of love, but there is still a little bit of attachment to me getting mine in that. Okay. And this is not, that's not putting yourself down to realizing that. That's just being honest. Okay. I'm doing this for you and I really want to do this for you. But in the back of my mind, I kind of hope that means you'll do this for me, or you'll be nice to me, or you'll want to spend more time with me. And they've never agreed to do that. Okay. So that one, that's a false perception. You know, that's an attachment to something that may or may not happen. So rather than being resentful, angry towards them, we see them as a teacher. They are showing us even our very subtle degree of attachment to people acting the way we expect them to act. We're still online. We're getting some power flicking ring on and off here. Okay, great. Okay, so this is really about attachment. Okay. Attachment to having the lights on, yes. Let's see, am I still... Okay. So it doesn't have to be terrible harm, but just not doing what we hope they would do. A little bit of attachment. It could be terrible harm. I mean, we've all had experiences where we've been very kind to someone and they stab us in the back, so to speak. Okay, that's a more extreme example. Okay, that's an even greater teacher. Okay, showing us that we don't have any control over other people. All we can do is control our mind. And we can either be resentful and bitter, or we can say, okay, I'm going to take this experience and I'm going to learn from it. Okay? Any comments there? Yeah, we have one over here. Thank you, Aaron.
Would that fall under?
You have to hold it real close.
Would that fall under the umbrella of the way they're treating me is their karma?
Well, they're acting out of their karma. The fact that you gave them something wonderful and they gave you shit back—that's your karma, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm, okay. So again, that's a great way to approach this situation, saying, you know, at some point in the past, I created the cause for it to work out this way. You know, I'm not the victim of this person. This is just my karma acting out through them, okay? Yeah, so it's both people are bringing their own karma to the situation. It's interacting, yeah.
I mean, it's karma that you are interacting with them in the first place.
Exactly, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
So if you kind of think of it as all karma, then...
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. It's much less personal when you think of it that
helpful.
Way. Yeah, it doesn't mean you're, you know, it's predestination or it's all programmed out, but it's less about personality and individuality when you think about it that way. Okay, we're on borrowed time. And I just, okay, so those two verses I think are very practical. They're easy to understand once you set aside some of the language that seems maybe a little bit harsher. Stern at times, but they're really, these two are really practical. I mean, they're all practical. Like I say, there's very little of Buddhism that you have to bring to these to actually get some benefit from. This is just, you know, a more, you know, when you combine it with the Buddhist view of the mind, how flexible it is, it's really just basic psychology. So I wanted to read verse 7, which we'll be talking about next week. We're going to do just verse 7 next week because this is such an important one. So let me just read this out loud. In short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. And by mothers here, they mean, he's referring to the fact that we've all been, in previous lifetimes, we've all been as close to every living being as we've been to our mother in this lifetime. Okay, so if you had a terrible relationship with your mother in this lifetime, you could say fathers or cousins or grandmother or whatever, but we're talking about how close we are with everyone, not just with our mother or father of this lifetime, but we've been that close with everybody in previous lifetimes. So I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. So I'm offering happiness to others. I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. So I'm giving happiness to others and I'm taking their suffering. This is a mental process. And the technical or the Tibetan name for this is Tonglen, taking and giving. And it's a wonderful meditation practice. And there have been dozens and dozens of books written about Tonglen, giving and taking. It's a practice that for some reason, but I think you can understand, but for Westerners, this is really clicked with a lot of people in the West. And you see a lot of teachers who really emphasize this in our teachings. So that was what we'll be talking about next week is Tonglen. And we'll actually do the meditation practice where we mentally give happiness and take suffering. Okay, we're not physically doing it. We're not actually doing it, but we're imagining that we're giving happiness to everyone and we're taking their suffering. It's a great meditation, and we'll work on that next week. So let's just sit quietly for a moment. I don't think we really have time for a guided meditation, but we'll get out of here before the power goes off, I think. And just for a moment... Let's just think about in our interactions with others. I think the message from these two verses we talked about at night is not to be attached. Not to be attached to being right. Not being attached to winning. Not being attached to others acting the way I think they should or responding to my actions in the way that I think is appropriate. Yeah. And that first comment we had tonight, attachment. So everything really tonight has been around the theme of attachment, which means overestimating the good qualities of something, of overestimating how beneficial it is to win No. Don't be so attached to that. Don't cling to other people acting in a certain ways. So you can relax your concentration. So again, the homework is to continue with the readings. Meditate 6 times this week, 3 times on verse 5, 3 times on verse 6. And then when we come back next week, we'll work on verse 7, and that'll be a full class doing the actual Tonglen meditation. And thank you for the comments and questions, and drive carefully in the rain out there. And we'll see you next week, okay?
Thank you, Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.